I think the first thing I ever did in this space was play with your band. I'm a rock and roll drummer, as some of you know, and you know we can't do music like that as much as I'd like to in our space for other reasons, but it's wonderful to come and see all y'all giving us this gift today. Thanks. I'm going to begin this today with a story from the Middle East about a holy man who was serving as a judge for a village. One day, a local innkeeper comes to the judge, this holy man, to bring suit against a poor student. "This poor student has lingered outside my restaurant, holy one, and he has stolen from me." Well, the holy man said, "Well, what has he stolen?" "The sweet smell of my good food," replied the innkeeper. "Unwilling to pay for the food himself, he lingers outside the door of my kitchen and avails himself of what is not his, the aromas of my cooking. Thus I work and slave, and this scoundrel takes advantage of my labors and won't pay." And the judge looks at him and says, "Is this true, young man?" And the student says, "It is, father. I'm a poor student, scarcely able to pay for my room and my books. I live on scraps, which I beg wherever I can. But the wonderful smells from the inn I cannot resist. And so daily I hang about and imbibe those odors and thus imagine that I am eating those very delicacies." And the holy man looked at him and said, "Well, have you any money on you now?" "Only a few coins, father," the student replied. "Hand them over." So the poor student passed his last coins to the holy man, and the innkeeper smiled a big smile of satisfaction. And the holy man said, "Innkeeper, close your eyes and listen to my judgment." So puzzled, the innkeeper closes his eyes, and then with his eyes tightly shut, he heard the student's coins being jingled in the judge's hand. "Do you hear, innkeeper?" "I hear, wise one," replied the innkeeper. "Good, because the sound of the coins has paid for the smell of your food." So the holy man returned the coins, adding a few of his own to the students. Now, of course, in what we like to call the real world, the innkeeper needs customers with hard cash so he can stay in business and keep those wonderful smells wafting for those who can pay as well as those who cannot. And like that inn, what we do here is available to those who pay and those who do not or cannot. And of course, we welcome everyone through our doors on a Sunday morning, regardless of what or if they pay. We know that many are like the student, unable to pay now, even if they have other offerings like time or talent or just the gift of their presence. We cherish those precious offerings as much as the treasure that most provide. And for those of us with resources, it is also true that if you're experiencing something more than a smell, here during your pledge drive, we might be asking you for something more than a jingle. But oh, Sterlingers, this place doesn't just smell good. It feels good. It does good. And still, it's true, stewardship volunteers can encounter things that often most attract people to Unitarian Universalism and to this church. They find sometimes that the same thing that bring us here can make it difficult to ask for donations. We in this faith live in that tension of freedom. Being a free faith means we're supposed to question what we're told. And some believe resisting what they're told or asked is a spiritual discipline. Even if that call is to invest in the future of the church that they love. But I don't really see that here. It seems to me that this is a congregation that trusts its leadership And it's evidenced by the way you show up to support the mission of this, your professional religious institution. Your leadership has demonstrated that they are sound stewards of your mission, worthy of your most sacred trust. Now, there are some, I hear, who say that we're at a theological disadvantage when it comes to stewardship time. Many faiths hold over their people the threat of devilish hellfire as a motivator to give. But as a universalist, I've always rejected the idea of hell, as I imagine most of you have, or else you might not be here. And that means, as a preacher, I cannot hold the prospect of eternal damnation over you as punishment for not giving a certain amount of money. Sorry, Corinne, I just can't do it. Though threatening damnation might make my job easier, it would make my preaching unholy, aligning me with the forces aligned to destroy our values. So I rejoice that I have not the threat of torment of eternity to frighten you into giving, because that would be barbaric, betraying our core values of respect, love, tolerance, and decency. And it's true that fear is always a corrosive tool, and it in no way encourages health in those who embrace it as a primary motivating factor. In our everyday comings and goings, fear destroys. Note the fear presenting itself as anger right now in our current presidential primary circus. Deliver us, Lord, please. I rejoice that we never use terror to leverage generosity, and anyone who does so is guilty of religious abuse, should be ignored. Instead, we appeal to you in this season of giving with love, a love embodied in generosity and treasure. So what is generosity and what is treasure? Look at one another. Look at these pretty people sitting around you. You and they are the treasure. The church is its mission, yes, but it is also its people. Nothing happens without you. Nothing matters unless you make it matter. Nothing is enabled here unless you enable it. And here in this congregation, there is such a wealth of talent, and I don't just mean the musical talent. When that talent for organization, for hard work, when that is applied to further the mission of this congregation, we accomplish so much more than when we write a check to the Sierra Club, to a political candidate, to a college, or other organizations. The giving of time, talent, and treasure to this mothership of holy service, as I like to refer to you guys, helps heal the world while simultaneously helping each of us spiritually. You heard Corinne testify to that. It helps us relationally. Supporting this house of hope where we meet, serve, and worship face to face, nurturing sacred community is worthy of our attention and sacrifice. Nothing brings people together so much as serving our deepest held values together, embodied in the flesh. At the church I serve, this was recently made powerfully clear when we turned our sanctuary into a hypothermia shelter. More than 60 ACA-tinkers worked just this past week, side by side, sharing their gifts to serve our mission and the needs of the disinherited of Fairfax County. And you all felt this in your service to the community table of Loudoun, in your witness to Loudoun County Muslims last December, in your annual Help Portrait event, in your jazz poetry slam. You may not even know it, but UUCS is becoming known in your wider community as a leader in justice and witness to the marginalized. Just Friday, I was at an interfaith event in Fairfax County, and Fairfax County has a director of interfaith cooperation, Sandy Chisholm. And she noticed my last name was similar to the last name of another minister she had heard about. So she asked me about your good reverend, and I said, yes, that happens to be my wife. And she said, I heard at a national interfaith conference about an amazing event in support of Muslims, and it's the one that she and you all led last December. Such service is why we exist. The breaking down of those walls that John talked about in his prayer. And this service is what matures us as colleagues in faith. We are on this journey together. What you learn, what you see, is important for me to know and for each of us to know, because it deepens all of our faith journeys. This congregation's treasure lies in each of your souls. Your hearts contain the wealth of what church is all about. You display also a vibrant generosity of time. The amazing time commitment so many of you make. You display a generosity of talent. I am left speechless by your expertise and your wisdom. Speechless. Not many ministers are or like to be speechless. The way you organize this amazing operation, the way that over the years you've professionalized your staff, the way that I wish we could do at Accutink, you've added paid teachers and nursery care providers. The way you embrace your role as a leading voice for truth and love in the community. The way you prepared for an entire year to go to two services. Sorry, who was in charge of that? Who was in charge of going to two services? Here. Nope. They're not here today. Maybe you? Here. I need some help at Accutink. I will pay you to help us get to two services. I'm not kidding.
Give Paul Roach a call.
You helped them know that churches exist not to be social clubs, but engines of holy creativity, designing ways to bring the beloved community more fully into being for all. What we here cherish and nourish belongs to the world. And the best way to share that gift and to grow any church is to offer more worship services. And the best way is to invite friends, neighbors, and family by word of mouth and even offer to drive them to church. And you are reaping the benefits of that work. This congregation has grown 12% in membership since September, and your attendance is up by 40%. I am jealous. And you should be proud. You guys truly rock. Then there is generosity of spirit. And like the church that I serve, this congregation demonstrates its mature generosity of spirit in so many ways. This is a very healthy church. Trust me, I can tell you tales of churches, some close by, that sadly are so toxic. And they don't know how to treat one another. They don't know how to treat their staff. They think that what they have is a possession that they're supposed to hide. This church is nothing like that. You are a model of health and vitality. Now, of course, people come to church for many different reasons. And one of the most common is that desire to discern our deepest values and to try and live in accordance with them. Our common call asks us, once we decide what it is we live for, to keep before us the moments of our high resolve, to remember that we serve together a mission far greater than any single one of us. We share a sacred duty to remain at the wheel amid the storms of personality and disappointment. And you also, yes, shower a generosity of treasure. Nothing happens here or at any church without financial investment in our ministries. So let us look directly at the financial side of stewardship. I grew up Southern Baptist, in case you couldn't tell. So I grew up with the notion of tithing, giving 10% off the top of my income to charities that I deem worthy. And Reverend Anya and I strive to tithe. We give roughly $11,000, one-tenth of our salary before taxes, mostly to the two churches we serve. Now, of course, we all have different life circumstances. Anya and I have no kids. We have no debt outside of our mortgage. I believe, though, that we and most of us can find more funds to donate, and nearly all can donate something. And Anya and I believe giving until it feels good. I still recall the first time I pledged to a church. It was 1997, and I was just a regular attendee. I wasn't a member. I had hair down to my belt. I had a big goatee. Nobody knew really who I was. And the pledge chair was this young guy, and he was a first-time pledge chair. And he gave a very clear and earnest pitch. And I didn't know how much it took to run a church. I didn't know that there wasn't some pope giving him money to keep the place going. I didn't know any of that stuff. And so I thought about it. I'm like, I made a $2,000 pledge. And he came running up to me after the service. He's like, did you put 10 too many down on that pledge card? I'm like, no, I'm single. I was single at the time. I'm single. I was an electrician, so I was making decent money. I really felt part of that church in deeper ways after that initial pledge. I was about 35 years old. Next thing you know, I was in seminary. That's another sermon. But it's just a message that when we give to something that means something to us, that builds what we know should be in the world, it changes us. And it brings gifts back to us we could never have imagined. And because, perhaps, of that first pledge, I also met my wife, your minister. I found my mission through giving. Speaking of mission, the mission of this congregation states, we are building the world we dream about, where all souls thrive in a diverse and loving community, acting daily on our commitment to justice. So allow me to share why we embrace this mission and why we give generously. I share the words of Rev. John Wolf, Minister Emeritus of All Souls Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who declares, you want to support this church because it stands against superstition and fear, because it points to what's noblest and best in human life, because it is open to men and women, no matter their race, creed, color, national origin, how they pray, whom they love. You want to support UUCS because it has a free pulpit. I have the first word. You all get to challenge me when I'm done. You want to support UUCS because you can hear ideas expressed here which would cost many ministers their jobs. You want to support this place because it is where children can come without being saddled with guilt or told how to think or terrified with some God who's really a celestial peeping Tom. Where they can learn that religion is for joy and challenge, for gratitude and love. You want to support this place because this is where walls between people are torn down rather than built up. This is a place for the religious displaced persons of our time, the refugees from mixed marriages, the unwanted free thinkers, and those who insist against orthodoxy that they must work out their own beliefs. So see your pledge captain soon. Lighten their load. Fill out that form. Let's get it done in time. And remember that abundance is the natural state of the universe. Keep before you the values that bring you here, that multiply generosity of spirit, time, treasure, and talent as we work to enlarge and share our common treasure. And we do this for the sake of saving the world, one soul at a time, beginning with our own.